Hey guys, I just finished this interview with Henry from Watchmaking Project, and I think you guys would truly, truly, truly enjoy this interview about two guys just shooting the shit. Henry goes over a couple things in the industry that aren't really talked about, and also he goes over some of the stuff that he feels is necessary. And on top of that, we also answer a great deal of questions from you guys from the Instagram audience live. And at the end of the day, I think you guys will love it, and sit back and enjoy the show.
And we're officially live. All right, so we don't have anyone joining it yet. So look, you can see here if anyone's joined it yet. Okay, so we have a couple people joining already, right? Hey, what's up, guys? Okay, so first of all, I want you guys to meet Henry, okay? And this is Henry from Watchmaking Project. He is the
managing director of Watchmaking Project. We're a small service-based watchmaking company in New York City. Saturday night, I'm working away. Cheers. It's not water. It's actually vodka.
So cheers.
Cheers. Being interviewed by the notorious. He'd kill me for this, but Knobs Watchmaker.
It's no bullshit Watchmaker.
But cheers. Cheers to Knobs.
Cheers.
Without him, I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't have half the support I have today. So it's much appreciated.
Okay, so let's get this started off.
All right, let's do it.
We have a couple questions from several people, okay? A lot of people have already asked us several questions. Let's start off with, what are the top three watch brands you would recommend for a average watch enthusiast?
So for an average watch enthusiast, depending on your price range, I would believe a good starter would be Omega or Rolex. They do the watches right, they do it mass production, and do it well. The next tier, depending on how crazy you can get, you know, with the Vacherons, the Pateks, and the Audemars Piguets, I lean more towards Jaeger.
Jaeger-LeCoultre.
Jaeger-LeCoultre, yeah. Either Jaeger, and then my next one would be Audemars Piguet.
Audemars, oh, okay.
And well, it's my choices are biased.
Okay, right? we have...
So I have to explain why. I used to be a former Audemars Piguet watchmaker / technical advisor, and then I also was a bench watchmaker for Swatch Group, which encompasses the whole Swatch Group brand, which Omega obviously is one of them. So, and I also worked at the Fifth Avenue boutique, the flagship boutique as well. So, but it's Omega, Audemars Piguet, Jaeger-LeCoultre.
Mm-hmm. Well, we already have Darice ask, what about best high-end watches?
Buddy, Richard Mills, MB&Fs.
You like that stuff?
How? That's a high-end horology, right? I mean, depending on high-end, I mean, what's your definition of high-end?
Well, I mean, Richard Mille, for the most part, is really just like material, case material, and all
it
that.
It comes out of the APR, APRP, right?
Yep.
Audemars Piguet Renault Papi, the vision of watchmaking. That's where AP and Richard Mille, they pull their crown jewels, you know, in the fact in the locket.
Okay, so you would recommend Richard Mille and stuff like that for high-end watches?
I mean, it depends on what you like, right? Like, you can get really high-end on stuff, and everyone's different. It's like, what I would consider a high-end French meal is different from what someone would consider.
Sure. What are your personal recommendations?
I mean, I just said it, right?
It's yeah, Darice right here says, I like Patek, but I've been told the movements are not as good as others.
Okay. On the record, Patek movements are shit. They were good when it was Lamagna movements. Before that, they got Jaeger movements. And, I mean, alright, they probably have a couple things right. I might have the whole backlash on this. But, guess what? That'll work for them. I applied. I guess they like my credentials.
Oh, you applied?
Oh, yeah. It was like Goldman, right? Like I used to also wait, as a caveat, I also was a former investment banker, right?
Okay.
Former was a banker, and then like my main bread and butter essentially was watchmaking. So yeah. Okay. So they suck. Okay.
Okay. Well, we have Crusoe Jr. and MB&F is doing crazy stuff with complications and materials. Yep. Okay. Yep. Do you like MBF?
Yeah, they're crazy. I mean, they do crazy shit. Anyone who has the audacity to do some of the shit that they... I mean, have you seen some of their... It's like a Star Trek, Star Wars, slash, like, transponder
yeah.
types of thing.
Okay, that's neat.
It's cool.
Okay, oh, watch Travis. Hey, what's up, Travis? Travis writes for, he's a cool guy. He's a cool guy. Richard Mille gets his prices because they position themselves as a club for the ultra rich.
Well, Richard Mille doesn't own Richard Mille anymore. Let's be perfect.
What do you mean?
Clear. Richard Mille doesn't own that company.
So who owns Richard Mille?
I believe it's a private equity.
Oh yeah?
He sold, yeah.
So it's kind of like Breitling now.
I mean, Breitling owns a percentage, right? Be nice. We have friends with Breitling. Be nice, okay?
Okay. Okay, best of the best. Let's take a look at this.
Cheers again. Some more vodka.
Travis says it's positioned as a status symbol for the ultra rich. A block to watch. Yeah, sorry, Travis.
sorry, guys.
Okay, so let's go on to the next question. Okay, so what is the number one tip you would give to a watch enthusiast?
Oh, this is simple. I recently helped somebody from Gear Patrol write a whole article about what not to do. Because when a watch enthusiast gets into their watches, they worry about maintenance, care, and all that other stuff. So the next thing you look at after you get their watches, next accessory, it's like the second thing they do after they purchase their watch is to look for watch winders. It's shit. Don't get it. Fuck the winders. On the record, I told, like, I don't know how, with the following of Gear Patrol, but I told all of them to fuck the winders. It's worthless unless you have this, like, ultra grand complication from Audemars Piguet, Patek Philippe, Vacheron Constant. Not necessary. It's not needed. Don't do it.
So no watch winders.
Fuck watch winders.
Do you get any backlash? Do you get any backlash for saying fuck watch winders?
Watch winders companies can probably sue me, but...
Okay, so let me ask you this. A lot of people, when they use watch winders, they use it for the ease and convenience. That's a lot of the stuff I hear. Mm-hmm. Would there ever be a situation where you feel the need to use a watch winder?
Yeah, like I just said before, your perpetual calendar, if you have grand complication that requires synchronization... At the highest level. Right?
So what, like a perpetual annual calendar?
No, it gets even complicated. There are times where I would have to remove a really old Audemars Piguet watch and to reset the beam. Oh, I call it the beam, right? It's a counter that actually logs the records of the year, right? Mm-hmm. After certain things, the thing dips in the beam. I call it the beam because it looks like it represents a beam to me.
Sure.
So older watches... You always have to reset that, like manually reset that. Whereas new watches, they put some fail safes to prevent that from.
Well, okay, look, Skippy here, Skippy1416 says watch winders are a good idea if you have a large collection and vintage watches without a quick set date. What do you think?
Again, it's each to their own. My equivalent of watch winders is how, I mean, I've been told by this from one of my former supervisors, and I quote him on this, right? As it equates to leaving a really nice Ferrari or Porsche on 24 hours because you want to keep the engine warm.
That makes sense.
I don't see a reason for that, in my sense, right? And what I think. But what I feel like, if a watch really requires constant maintenance and upkeep and that level of maintenance,
yeah,
go for it.
Okay.
Right?
Midwest Wrist says... If you could only have three watches for 2018, which ones would it be? Three.
Audemars AP Jumbo.
AP right? What?
An AP Jumbo.
Okay.
A Jaeger Geophysics.
Je Le Coq Geophysics, huh?
And then...
Wow, this is for the 1%.
And then probably... a Rolex or an Omega, just like mix it up, just so people don't hate me.
Oh, you like Rolexes?
I mean, listen, Rolex does some things right, and marketing is amazing. Their movements, to be completely honest, they do three movements only, right?
Well, they do more than three movements.
Men's, ladies choreograph.
Okay.
Three movements. When they debut in SSIH or Bezel Basel or wherever else they go, change your bezel color, change the dial color, and then the whole world comes. The whole world orgasms because Rolex does that.
Okay, the Reese asks, what brands do you think fly under the radar yet have good movements? It's a good question.
There's a lot of micro brands in the U.S., in Singapore, Malaysia, Ming, Okanoskar. There's a lot of brands that do good stuff. Right? Okay. They fly under the radar, and I feel like it has a collector value towards it. So, you know, and then full disclosure, I talk with the marketing guy at Ming, and we do work for Okanoskar. So oh, we're the official watchmakers. That's weird.
For those of you who don't know, and you guys came in the middle of the conversation, this is Henry from Watchmaking Project. He is the
head watchmaker, all this other fancy bullshit, but end of the day, after all the emails and all the like management type stuff, like this is my bread and butter. This is what gets me hot and horny at the end of the night. Like, I love this stuff.
Hot and horny, yeah.
Right? Like, this does it for me, right? Like, everyone talks about reference numbers. Like, do you know this, and that? No. My Red Bar followers, I apologize to you guys, because you guys know who you are. If you talk to me, I'll tell you in your face. Like, just show me the movement, buddy. I'm a movement guy. Like, I sit there. This is what I look at, right? I understand the reference number, like, case, dial, serial, all that stuff. Okay. But again, this is what gets me hot and horny at night.
Okay, Nia36 says, what do you think about the Naked Watchmaker? That's with Peter Speak Marine.
Okay.
It's okay, you can go honest here.
So, alright, to be completely honest, he lost his company, right?
He lost?
He sold.
He sold it?
He doesn't have it. His company is not managed by him. Managed by either private guys or hedge funds again, and he doesn't own it, right? So that like he still has to stake a claim.
Wait, isn't this the one that has Pierce Brosnan in it? Pierce Brosnan was the ambassador,
technical watch coordinator for that movie.
Oh, wow.
That's it. But that doesn't speak much to his brand. He essentially lost his brand because I guess like again, completely honest there, like some people are good business people,
mm-hmm.
some people good watchmakers, some people good managers, and he probably was just a good watchmaker, right?
Yeah, I saw
this. And people, a lot of people fall into that trap, right? Like, even myself. Like, in theory, I manage this, like, fancy watch service company, but on a Saturday night when I should be with my family, this is what I'm doing.
Hey, I'm here too, alright? I'm here visiting you. All right, so Travis, watch Travis. Travis says, no love for the Zenith gravity complication. No, that's a no.
Okay.
All right, next. Ali 88 says, Japanese or Swiss vintage?
Both.
Okay, good.
The Japanese, they got themselves to a certain point where the accuracy rivals that of Swiss watches. But what they don't do well are finishes.
Oh,
Japanese are going to that end of finishes, but they're still not there yet. But their accuracy is on point.
Okay. Nia36 says, what's the best movement out there? That you can honestly say however you want.
Best movement to service, that I like servicing, like what? I mean, because when you ask me what the best movement is, I mean, it's the 2892.
The 2892? You think so? I like the 2024. That mainspring is heavy as shit. You know, looks like it could power up a car.
2892 powers 80% of the industry.
2892? Oh, yeah. Breitling and
Stilettis copies it. Solprod copies it. All the other brand copies it, but they can't get that efficiency.
Yeah, they don't have the amount of money.
Why didn't they copy a 2824? Answer that question.
Well, in theory, it's 2824.
Shit. It's shit. That's why. No one likes that fucking movement.
But here's the thing. I love the 2024. Well,
because that's what you love.
I think the mainspring is...
Your opinion is shit.
I like my...
Fuck you, Nubs.
I like the 2824.
Fuck you, Nubs.
All right, go fuck yourself.
You're shit.
All right, so...
Next.
German movements or Swiss movements? Chiho 711. German movements or Swiss movements? Good question, huh? Okay.
I like Nomos.
Oh, you like Nomos?
I love what they stand for. I love the stuff that comes
out. What does Nomos stand for? Oh, deer in headlights.
Wait. Decent quality watch that has in-house built movements. So, like, aside from, like, Rolex or Omega, Nomos is what I would get. You get the most bang for your buck because it's done in-house. The decoration servicing is...
Did it use ETA?
No.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
It's in-house. Okay. But it's not cheaply decorated. They put like, when I order parts, like, we're a service provider for Nomos, right? We use their service.
Okay.
So when I get parts from Nomos...
Shameless plug.
Okay. All right, keep going.
It comes in a really nice package. Yes, packaging is well. Their parts comes well. Everything comes proper from them.
Great.
Right? So...
Okay, that's good.
I don't mean to compare both of them, but they're both good. But I like out of the German brands, I like Nomos as like the most entry level brand.
Isn't Nomos with the Gleshoot?
No, they're in Gleshoot.
They're in Gleshoot. So Nomos is a subset, a subsidiary.
No, Gleshoot is a city or a town.
Okay.
In Germany, buddy.
But Gleshoot is also a company.
Yes, Richemont company.
Okay. Midwest Wrist says, what is the worst experience you have had opening a watch?
You know who Midwest sounds like? You sound like you would work perfectly. You would drive well with Knobs. Because Knobs will have stories to tell you. So here's the thing, right? Like, a lot of people...
It's no bullshit, by the way.
Knobs.
Oh my god.
Okay, no bullshit. Okay, wait. So a lot of people dwell on the fact of negativity, right? Like, I can talk to you about all the horror stories as sort of like the head diagnostic person within Swatch Group, like, we receive thousands upon thousands of watches every year, right? The stories are endless. Why go on?
What brand did you work for in Swatch?
So, I trained the head diagnostics within Swatch Group. I did rotation as a person who, like, oversaw the diagnostic department slightly.
Okay, that's neat.
I also was the head watchmaker for Longines. I mean, not head watchmaker, but like, I mean, I did a lot of Longines applications because I'm one of the few certified in the US.
Oh, wait. Can I show your certificates?
Okay,
wait. Let me show your certificates. Okay, look at this. This is the certificate from Secaucus for Henry.
Two of them.
Longines.
All existing Longines productions.
This is Wallstep. Okay. Look at him as a Omega lab coat when he did presentations and stuff like that. And he was the traveling watchmaker for Omega. And then you have Okay. So, alright. Nia36 says, what is your best complication? But I'm assuming it's what is the best complication you feel is out there currently? The best complication. Let's just go with that.
That's tricky. I mean, to say there's the best means like there's the best meal, right? There's no best complication. There's only a variety of them where each day, like one week I'll work on like a triple date annual calendar, and then another week we'll work on something else, and then like it varies every week. I mean, there's no best one. It's the one I get for that week that, like, a private collector brings to me that needs that special care and attention that brand won't bring them.
Okay. Right?
So.
Pozo Bozo says, Germany versus Swiss in terms of finishing. Regarding the comparison of Japanese versus Swiss.
The Swiss takes his hand out, right? Like, even if... Yeah, the Swiss takes finishing, hand decoration... hands down. So if you want to talk about finishing, I suggest you Google Henry Corpola.
Henry Corpola.
He's a good buddy of ours, good buddy of mine. We see each other regularly, like probably twice or three times every year, just to get drunk, get wasted, and just to shoot the shit.
Oh, right? Speaking of which, it's a great segue. Okay. One of the questions is average watchmaker. The misconception of a watchmaker. Most people think of watchmakers as old, decrepit, and saggy and old. But you clearly have a set of full black hair, and you look not like you're 70 or 80 years old.
Most people would come at this and would tell me that I'm too young. to be watchmaker.
Okay.
Because of my charming good looks. Oh, are you choking? Are you okay there?
Yeah. I'll try to finish my vodka.
Okay. So yeah, on that note, I've been doing this for about 20 years, right? So I've seen everything, right? Like, when I first started this, I apprenticed as a kid in high school, right? So the guy who I learned from was just the stereotypical watchmaker who was old and just, like, you know, all I did was, like, rip movements apart, take everything apart.
Okay.
Put them clean, gave the guy, he deserved
it. Old school, like, do it by hand.
Like, essentially, right? Over time, as I went through the years in high school, I got more and more responsibilities to the point where I ended up graduating high school and leaving my apprenticeship sort of as a watchmaker. Ended up working at a place called Watch Central. Used to be a full-service facility in 42nd Street. Again, it's Watch Central, not Central Watch, because everyone confuses those two. So.
Oh, yeah, I was actually speaking to Central Watch a couple days ago. Okay. Alejandro asks, what's on your wrist?
QCing a piece.
It's QCing an Omega.
So, like, full disclosure, this piece is worked by other watchmakers. This is worked by us. What I found out at the end of our testing and servicing, that there was slightly too much side shape within one of the bridges.
Oh, man,
That the pinion rests on. And that pinion was slightly bent. So we had to, like, we had to do the correct service on the watch, and it took time.
I hear all the watch enthusiasts just, like, orgasm over that.
Sorry, I don't
want to get too specific. Okay, what's the difference between 17 jewels and 21? Ooh.
17 jewels being that watch has 17 rubies. 21-1 means it has 21 rubies.
All right.
I don't know. I don't know how else.
Next question. Are Russian movements any good? I've seen a few around, but hesitant to buy.
Depending what brand, I've serviced a couple Russian movements from really, really well-respected collectors in Russian timepieces and, like, sort of heritage pieces, and they're not bad. I mean,
not bad.
They have their merits, right? Like, at some point, I mean, all the eggs, all that, like, fancy automaton stuff was kicked. They were all coming out of Russia.
Really? Yeah. Automatons?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
The eggs? All the
eggs.
I mean, that takes a watchmaker to do that.
Danimal FTW says, what do you think about the Tudor MT5612?
You know, I think I touched upon this earlier. We could talk movements all day, but if you want to talk specific watches and model numbers, it's like over my head, right? Okay. So you can email me. Listen, I'm more than happy to take this discussion offline. Henry@watchmakingproject.com.
Okay.
We can talk movements all day.
Great. Travis says, actually refer to you as Knobs as well.
Oh,
that's,
really?
That's terrible, Travis. Midwest.
High five, buddy.
Midwest wrist says Knobs just sounds wrong. I agree. Sounds like they're talking about some other knob. Aaron Sigmund Books. Hey, what's up, brother? He's the author of Drive Time, if you guys have not.
Wait.
Let me take a look. I got a Drive Time book over here. The original
next
one
to my made. AP move. Okay. It's like AP calibers and Longines calibers.
Okay, let's take a look at some of the questions. Differences between servicing the coaxial and the Swiss lever escapement by Marvin PH.
I had an argument with, not George Daniel. What's the guy? Sam Smith? No, what's the guy?
Sam Smith is a singer.
No, that's it.
And George
who's the guy that's running? That's so shitty of me right now because I took a picture of that guy. Roger Smith.
Okay.
I'm arguing about that. Okay, so the final consensus came down to when George Daniel made the coaxial scale, right? Because I've literally primarily done coaxials for like 5 to 6 years within
the so you primarily only did coaxial?
Oh, I did everything else, right? Like coaxial, the special caliber watches, like retrograde for Longines. Like, I'm certified essentially for most of 99.9% of all the calibers in Omega, right? So I know their productions. Like, at one point I was supposed to train the Asia division within Omega Switzerland.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah, but I mean, that didn't come to fruition because I ended up working for Audemars Piguet.
Okay.
Long story short, George Daniels made that escapement out of gold. Pure gold. This guy made one watch a year, and he had the money to make that escapement.
He did the coaxial from gold.
His escapement was gold.
Oh, wow.
His escapement was gold.
Isn't that brittle?
But No. But that left... There's no friction.
Oh, okay.
So gold... I mean, there's no friction on that metal, right? But when you mass produce something of that sort, they coated that wheel to look like gold or whatever. But at the end of the day, they had to end up, like... having some work around it so that, and I can't explain why, I mean, obviously, given the nature of things. You know, we can have, again, private discussion offline, but they had to have a work around that escapement so that it can work, function properly, right? So a coaxial now is completely different from a coaxial 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Okay. Oh, well, there was a huge thing when I was over at Omega as well. They're talking about how a lot of people compare Omega to the coaxial that George Daniels did. But Omega likes to say that they actually perfected the coaxial and that it's now no longer the same image as George Daniels' original coaxial.
That's correct. But when you mean perfected, it's years and years of R&D. It's years and years of recall on their watches. It's years and years of like, fuck, I just serviced this timepiece. It just came back again. I did the exact Omega factory specifications when this timepiece would come back. Why is it on my bench again, right? Like, why is it sitting here again and coming back to me? And then I would raise it up. I would argue with supervisors. I would argue with the technical trainers to get to the bottom of the issue, right?
Mm.
So.
Okay. Too Manyism says, can you get parts for Zenith 30 19PH Datron 360? I'm going to say...
Send me an email.
Send me an email. Okay. That was a beautiful face that we got. We got some love faces, fires, and thumbs up. Legendary. James Cornish says, scotch or whiskey?
Depends on the night.
Depends on the night. Great. Right now, he is drinking vodka. Okay.
But normally, if you ask anyone from Analog Shift, anyone from Red Bar or Ichiumi, I'm a Lafroy guy.
LaFroy tastes like shit.
A little for the smoking.
Yeah, sure,
100% smokiness.
Okay. And Coffrey Watch says that's no BS. That is not no BS. That is Henry from Watchmaking Project.
Yeah, I mean, dude, what is this?
Travis says, are you hitting on him? I am not hitting on Henry, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
He's not wearing his ring tonight.
Ring?
But, okay. Okay, New York Times bestseller. Does a comment. Nia36 says, do you like Apple Watches? What do you think about smartwatches?
It has its place in the industry, right? Because to knock on it would be bullshit, right? Because if you follow me, at Henry Lee LYY, and on Instagram, I have an Apple Watch, right? So.
Oh, so you own an Apple Watch.
I own an Apple Watch. Okay. Yeah, some shithead got it for me over the holidays, which I was like reluctant to wear. And there was a return policy on it.
I feel bad for that shithead.
I know, that guy's a complete knob.
Okay.
Alright, so I feel like it has a place. So, like, I mean, it helped me as a watchmaker. When I sat on the bench for too long, which sometimes I do, it'll ping me every hour, 2 hours. So, like, you haven't stood up in a while. There's no activity from your wrist in a while. You should stand up now. So, like.
So, you find that annoying?
No, it's good.
Like, oh, okay.
The fact that it pulled me out from like, my.
Your zone.
My zone that, like, it was like, you need to...
I'm sure some people would think that's a bad thing, no?
I don't. Okay. You're asking for my opinion.
Yeah, okay. So what do you think about it? You like it?
Yeah, it has its place. Yeah.
Smartwatches in the industry?
Has its place. Won't, it'll never put the Swiss industry out of business or watchmaking out of business, but it has its place. Because if you look at Apple Watch, it's a technology that's finite in time, right? Once that watch comes out, it's like a phone, right? It's like the iPhone. You wouldn't have an iPhone 1 now, right? Because that shit wouldn't make sense.
But I actually did a lengthy conversation about that the couple days ago about watchmaking being a low-tech field, about how watchmaking in general is a very mechanical field in its nature.
But you still require the proper tooling and equipment, right? Like, you still need the tools and equipment to make shit work, right? And this tooling and equipment and supplying and stocking are, for me, about $250,000. Okay. We have insurance in this place for that amount.
Bob's in the Money says, what are you both wearing? We already went over that. He's wearing an Omega, and I am currently wearing nothing.
Next. Smiling faces. Best book for making watches. Making watches. George, not my book, 100 Plus No PS Watch.
George Daniel Watchmaking Book.
You really like that book?
I mean, listen, if you want to talk about, like, a watch to a book where you can, like, ideally make watch, right?
This
like,
one right here, George Daniels.
That's a decent one. This is a decent one to start with, right? God rest that guy's soul, but he's missing tons of the shit in that book, right? It's... Heineken would probably fucking murder me, right? But, like, that book's missing tons of shit. Right. But it's a good story. Well,
it is missing a bunch of shit, like, honestly. At the end of the day, people think he's a...
he's a god.
People think of George Daniels as a god, yeah, but he's really not. He's a great guy.
He's an uneducated watchmaker who tinkered around and fucked around with it till he got...
Something right, yeah.
Right? But if you would have asked him, he will tell you. He would have got there a lot sooner if he had a proper and decent education.
Yes, 100%. But then again, that's watchmaking. The early days of watchmaking, a lot of people don't explain that as well. Early days of watchmaking, people just tinkered around and messed around with things until they got it right. You know, it's not like school where you go there and everyone teaches you exactly what you need to do. Travis asks, from a watchmaking perspective, benefits of a vertical clutch. Well, a couple benefits. First of all, the benefit of a vertical clutch is that there's no lag time when you start the chronograph. Versus a regular chronograph like on a 7750, you know what I mean? Clutches, it's a little bit harder on that end. Sometimes when you clean the vertical clutch wheel, it's harder to actually get the oiling points. So most watchmakers will recommend.
So now I'm being too technical right now. All right, let me stop him.
It's no bullshit.
Okay, no bullshit watchmaker. He's gonna be mad at me the entire night. All right, we'll have to buy him a drink. Okay.
Buy me a drink.
So, it depends on the caliber. It depends on what movement. It depends on what you like. I mean, I've worked on both of them. They both have their purpose.
Aren't you working on a chronograph right now?
Well, right now I'm working on
a cam system?
Yeah, a cam system.
Okay. So,
I mean, it has its place, right? So when I work on a LaMagna, when I work on 861, 1861, or 321, that is a vertical clutch system.
Okay, Bob's in the money says, "What's your Instagram?" My man over there is trying to, my man's trying to here make a move, you know. All right,
it's at Henry L Y Y on Instagram.
Okay,
and you'll see a picture of this, right? This will be like
great.
The first one you'll see.
Nia 36 says, "Who are the watchmakers you admire the most?"
It's the ones that are going to retire. You know why? There's a deeper reason behind it, right? Because think about it like this. For the entire course of their lifetime, they're putting... It's like a book. It's like a really, really good book that they've written, stories that they've had, experiences that they've all had. It's closing, and it gets thrown into the fire if it doesn't get passed down. Those are the watchmakers. I don't admire, but that's what I fear, and that's what I respect, right? I respect and I look for watchmakers who are of that like age range, because there's so much more that I don't know. Like, I know a shit ton.
Sure. Right? You meet both, man. You meet both. Okay.
I've been sped through this process for the most part, like, at where I'm at right now. A guy will probably finish 5 years in being a bench watchmaker at Swatch Group, or at Richemont, or at one of these, like, Patek, or one of these, like, other fancy places. And then maybe go on their own and start doing something, right? But I did my time with Daniel Omega. I did my time with Audemars Piguet. I did my time with a small watch company as well. And then, like, I started my own thing.
Mm.
So.
Okay. Who is the man behind OBS Watchmaker, the camera, or the man who answers the questions?
That's the guy who's talking.
I am OBS Watchmaker. I'm Anthony. This is Henry from Watchmaking Project. Again, he is the managing director of a international repair center.
He's being really
okay. Next, Seth Mikaskill says, "What's y'all thoughts on Lubrifar?" Ooh, Lubrifar.
I hate Lubrifar.
Yeah,
right?
Lubrifar.
That's something I take.
Lubrifar
is
pretty shitty.
Lubrifar coated. All right, I run through the cleaner. First, before I run through the cleaner, I have to put it through the whole treating process to get that shit off. Right? Once I get that gunk off, like from Rodico, from like whatever solvent I have,
okay, to the before you go on your rant, what is Lubrifar for the people who do not know what Lubrifar is? For the people who are not watchmakers, what is Lubrifar?
It is pre-treated from the factory.
So think of it like what? Epilum?
You can say that, right? But I wouldn't go as far as saying it. It's just pre-treated from the factory. Just think of something you would always normally get. It's like, what's a good common everyday item that comes in fucked up?
Your face. Alright, no. I'm kidding. Just kidding. Cheers. Okay, Seth says he agrees completely. Happy Bonito 474 says, other than a watchmaking lathe, is a Serling lathe an acceptable alternative? If it works for you, man, it works for you. I think that's a better question.
Again, as watchmakers, it's not our tool that defines us. It's the user, right?
Yes.
Like, this tweezer doesn't make me who I am, right? This screwdriver depends on how well I chop it and I finish it so that it can work within the caliber I'm working on.
Yes.
So it doesn't break the screwdriver, it doesn't mar it, it doesn't burn it, it doesn't make it look like a monkey worked on it. So we are essentially the key stakeholders in...
I actually had a conversation the other day about how they say good watchmakers essentially don't always have new tools. Or seasoned or good craftsmanship and everything. People who are good with their hands usually don't always have new tools.
I mean, I agree to some point, right? It's a yes or no, right? It's like, okay, I can have, you know, that there's a timing machine where it literally just records.
Oh yeah, the old one,
right?
Listen to
that, right? Like, I grew up around that timing machine, right? And I know the watchmaker who trained me to read that piece of shit fucking hated it. I hated reading that thing because it never made sense to me. I was like, why am I looking at lines for? Right? But wait. Fast forward to modern day, right? Like, let's use a phone, for example. Right? You don't really need your phone. You can go to your payphone, landline, or wherever. But that phone makes your life easier. Right? Like, the fact that I have tools that can enable my job, that can make stuff faster, that can make my productivity better, works for me. I don't work for it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So okay. It's a pro.
Another question we have is, what does a normal working day of a watchmaker look like?
Okay. That's a tricky question, right? So if you want to talk about a bench watchmaker, purely a bench watchmaker, this is a typical day. You go in early in the morning, maybe 6:30, 7 o'clock. You get onto the bench. At this point, as a bench watchmaker for Swatch Group Richemont, or any major brand, your bench should be brand spanking clean, right? There should be nothing on your bench. You take Windex, you take whatever solvent or cleaner you have, you wipe the bench down to clean enough dirt and debris, right? After that's done, you lay your tools out. You lay your weapons of choice, right? Pick your tools, whatever you'd like, right? I have my stuff here. After that's done, you will either A, have to go to your supervisor or manager to get work, or B, you have a movement that you got the night before that needs to get serviced. Then you start taking, so first thing I do is I wind the watch, I check the amplitude reading. I do my initial diagnostic on the watch before I break it apart. And I take the watch apart, put in the cleaner, clean it 45 minutes. When that's cleaning, I'm probably doing something else. I'm probably managing books, like keeping record keeping and stuff. When the watch comes out, I service it. And then I pass it off. I put it in my QC process, and the next watch gets serviced.
Okay. What do you think about Baselworld? Do you participate in Baselworld? Do you go to Baselworld?
You know, I was talking to Kathleen in Red Bar about that. So this year I was thinking about...
What was it? Red Bar, Baselworld's what? The 18th or something, right?
Soon. So
I think it was week or something
Basel
like that?
Basel is...
Oh.
I mean, it's good. I mean, it's an experience, right? Like, people go to it for that, right? I want to go to it for that experience, so... Yeah, I don't see why it's bad.
Okay. Nia36 says, have you ever worked on a replica?
Do you think it is a real problem for the industry?
I've seen tons of replicas. I haven't worked on.
Well, we've seen replicas with like ENA movements, like 2024, 2092, and stuff like
that. Chinese movements. I've taken them. Like, nope. No, I'm not touching this one.
Okay, JJWIS says, why did I think you were an Australian white guy, Knobs?
Really?
Yeah, he thought I was an Australian white guy. Okay.
I'm not, wait, first, I'm not Knobs. The guy who's interviewing me is
no, Anthony. I am no BS Watchmaker, I am Anthony. This is Henry, he's from Watchmaking Project.
I run a watch company in New York City. Or managing director of a watchmaking company in New York City, so that's... Let's make that perfectly clear.
Okay. What watch are you working on?
Right now, it is a... Take a look. Here's the... So I'm working on... I'm 90% done on the watch. This is the reading.
Oh, yeah, it's okay. The machine was turned off. Okay, that's good. 7750? Question mark?
Yeah. Yeah, fairly straightforward.
Okay.
Nothing too crazy.
What do you think about the Breitling's recent merger? Or buyout?
It's a strategic move, right? Breitling's always been stuck at a level within the watch industry as like here. They've always been stuck here. They've always tried to hit this next level and they never got there, right? So hopefully that next... The merger got them, or will get them, where they need to go. It's an initial infusion of capital to get them that next level.
Okay. Nia36 says, I love you. You are a great couple.
Aww. He then ups. Gotta buy me a drink now.
Listen, guys, we're about to end this soon. So if you guys have additional questions, I'll hit them up quickly in the chat. What do you think about the Holy Trinity, and why is Jerzy Lecoultre not in part of the Holy Trinity?
So...
Okay, let's go with the first question. What do you think about the Holy Trinity? Do you like the Holy Trinity and the whole idea of it?
It's good. I mean, everyone has this conception, right? The Holy Trinity was sort of forced upon... I mean, it's good. I mean, it's a nice set of three watches and three good brands, right? But if you look at the three good brands and who supplied them with that movement, it was Jaeger.
Jaeger Lecoultre.
Jaeger Lecoultre supplied these three calibers, like the Ultradent, the Jumbo Watch, the Patek, the Vacheron. Like, they're all used at one point Jaeger movements.
Hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know.
What do you think Jaeger's gone now? Do you think Jaeger's still a good brand? You think,
Yeah. So, one thing I do respect is their attention to details and their caliber, the level of calibers that they have at that price point.
Mm.
Right? Because if Jaeger was a private brand, that price would be double and triple. Just take AP, for example.
Mm.
Right?
So. JJLWS says Kern is going to be like Gene called Beaver.
Who?
Kern. Kern was the guy who used to own Breitling.
Is the next Gene called Beaver?
Is going to be like Gene called Beaver. What do you think about Bamford and stuff like that? Since Gene called Beaver's got on board, Gene called Beaver's got like Alec Monopoly, Bamford and stuff like that.
Well, in New York City, like I'm under non-disclosure agreement with some of the Bamford contacts, so I can't
really... Okay. Well, Bamford's not that great anyway. D. McCormick says, thank you, Bob's in the Money, for the loving words. What do you think of what ETA is doing with hack movements, like in the new Longines VHPS? Great.
I would have to reach out to Blinda Riker, who is the technical trainer of Longines.
Okay. Thoughts on Bucher's purchase of Tornal?
That happened?
Yeah, Tornal got bought out.
When?
Oh, several weeks ago. You didn't know? Carl F. Bucher bought out Tornal.
He needs the supply chain.
He bought out Tornal.
Only thing Tornal offers is a supply chain, maybe some service.
That's probably what it is. They essentially... Tornal is the largest U.S. supplier. Authorized dealer. Now so, that Bucher bought it,
they have access to the supply chain.
Yeah,
it's like think of Amazon buying out Whole Foods. some supply chain.
Jazzra says, Omega Speedmaster, which model would you choose?
Obviously the pre-moon model.
The what?
Speedmaster.
Oh, okay. M. Holodry says, favorite tweezers.
For what?
Favorite tweezers.
It is... I don't have it with me right now, but I mean... It's this one with the wooden with the wooden tip.
Well, I like mine with the Teflon coated one.
Rolex. I like Rolex.
I like the Teflon coated. What are your thoughts on Rolex?
Oh, don't get me started, buddy.
Oh, boy.
You can ask anyone to see what my thoughts are. Ask them what my thoughts are.
Okay, a quick gist. What do you think about Rolex? I mean, Rolex isn't bad, okay? Rolex isn't bad. Rolex, at the end of the day...
Rolex is never about innovation. They're about safety, security, and making money.
But Rolex is also about creating...
security and making money.
But Rolex is also about creating the best movement, the best watch. In terms of reliability.
They're reliable when it comes to that, right? But everything else is shit. Right?
Like, such as what? You want something new, right? You want, like, innovation.
If you want a brand to want to do something exciting and sexy, it's like, the most exciting thing to do is change a dial, change a bezel. As a watchmaker, that does nothing for me. I don't give a shit about that. I care about the innovation with movements, right? I care about, like, the next thing that's going to sit on my bench that I'm going to work on.
So you like new complications and shit like that. So you like Jacob and Cole, et cetera, like that, in terms of, like...
Bring them this conversation.
Like, Astronomia and all that stuff.
Well, I mean, listen, it has to be interesting, right? Like, you can't, like... All they have is men's, ladies, and pornographic.
Well, what do you want... What would you like to see Rolex do? Ooh, that's a good question.
Something else.
Like what? Introduce a grand complication?
No, I mean anything. I mean they've been doing this for years, right? But anything else? What else? What's the end game, right? Like they have a school, they have a charity fund, they purchase like half of the watch industry. They have marketing behind them. When everyone thinks of fancy watches, think of Rolex, right? You talk to a normal person, you want to talk about watches? First thing they ask you is, do you have a Rolex? Or what do you think of Rolex?
Well, Rolex is also a status symbol at this point. It's a status symbol. Most people wear Rolexes.
Why? Why?
Because of the marketing.
Marketing? Because who? Market placement? Because the bond...
Weren't they almost like number one? I'm pretty sure they were number one at one point as the number one brand in the world in terms of recognizable.
Because branding and marketing, right?
Yeah.
They do branding and marketing well. Like, but you think Patek. Patek does branding and marketing also very well at a high-end level. They keep it that, like, there's an exclusivity between Patek and Rolex.
Pozo Bozo says, the most recent Cellini with the moon phase watch, the most innovative Rolex in the, Guess and Sky Dweller.
Okay.
Okay. Marvin PH says, would you recommend a aspiring watchmaker to go to Swatch Group?
Depending where.
Where?
And depending on the group.
Okay, who and what?
Well, this is different, right? Like, I know Damien from Miami. I know the head watchmaker in LA, the Swatch Group. And I know the head guys in C-Clackers. So
okay.
Three spots, right?
Chris Peterson, Dan Fenwick, right?
Oh, well, Dan Fenwick retired. Chris Peterson is the Omega trainer, so you'll have nothing to do with him. Obviously, training for Omega products, which...
But would you recommend an aspiring watchmaker to a Swatch Group?
Depending on what their goal is. So if you want to work...
Marvin, what's your goal? Okay.
Yeah. What's your goal? Right? Okay. What is your goal? If you want to sit there and like make parts and you want to like, do this high
end. Yeah, Swatch Group isn't the place.
That's not for you, right? But if you want to go there and you learn nitty gritty of watchmaking and deal with shit.
Well, I mean, you're dealing with edit products. It's not.
It's not shit. You learn a lot really fast.
Yeah.
So
okay. Why do you have two sets of screwdrivers?
I have more. I have way more screwdrivers.
Why would you have more than one?
Think about it like that, right? Like, if I'm working on one caliber, it has one set of requirements. If I'm working on, which I am currently, I'm working on two sets of calibers right now, they have two sets of requirements that require two sets of different dimension screwdrivers.
So you have it just for the ease of the different dimensions of the screws?
Well, because I have pre-configured. So it fits my...
M. Halajari says he has about six driver sets.
Yeah. That's just the beginning, buddy.
Oh, wow.
There's a LaMagna one, there's a Frederic Begay one, there's an Edo one, there's one you use for, like, like really, really, really thin ones for setting systems.
Okay. Marvin says he's in watchmaking school currently, and he just wants to do regular services. He recently sent an application over to Omega.
Where?
Marvin, where did you send the application to Omega? I mean, for the most part, if you're watchmaking school and all you want to do is just regular services, I don't see why Swatch Group wouldn't be an ideal place.
That's a perfect place. They're not aware of it, right? Because you want him to start off with the right foot.
Yeah, also, here's the thing. When you're watchmaking school, it depends on what watchmaking school you're in. For the most part, you gotta know that you're not gonna be creating parts or anything like that when you go into Swatch Group. For the most part, every part is gonna be there for you.
There's a workaround for that. So
yeah. Mhorology says, what about the 7750? What stage is that in assembly?
I'm just wrapping it up. I mean, I'm putting on the calendar side, the dial side. Like, if you look at the dial side, like, it's wrapped up.
Awesome. Right?
It's all wrapped up. I'm just putting in the final touches to it.
When
I was trying to finish the watch,
well, it was an unexpected visit.
Anthony attacked me and was like, we need to do this interview now.
Taipei,
I have no time.
Taipei Tai said, do you think brand certification is important for a watchmaker?
Depending on what you want to, depending on your goals, right? For me, brand certification was validation of my skill because I apprenticed, right? My guy apprenticed with, like, I didn't have any, like, I didn't come out of his like dingy watchmaking shop with like this like brand spanking certificate.
Yeah,
like he wasn't some fancy watchmaker that the whole world knew. That I apprenticed for. Like it okay. was just some dude like, oh okay, I apprenticed, and like, oh we'll give you a shot, and then they're like, all right. To prove myself against all the other guys who went to WoWStep, went to other like official watchmaking school, like I passed some stuff that they would never pass or that they didn't pass.
Okay,
the first time.
Marvin says he sent his application to a service center in Germany.
Pforzheim, good luck, buddy.
Yeah,
in Pforzheim, you're literally doing one part of the wheel, or like you're a cog in the machine.
What do you think about CW21 and their recent move with thinking about removing the lathe portion on the exam?
No comment.
Okay, no comment.
I'll have to talk to
Fenway?
What's that guy's face?
Jordan?
Yeah, Jordan. I'll chat with Jordan about that, but listen.
Best place internship or volunteer in New York City area?
Is that a plug?
Shameless plug. Automatic Oilers, your opinion?
Has its place.
Okay.
I don't like it, but people use it. Knobs.
Well, first of all, there's great. Oh, I can do both. I can do it by hand and automatic oil. Okay, but there are some watches where the automatic oil is necessary because unless you can sharpen up your oiler really, really thin, which you can do, okay, and I can do as well. But for the most part, if you work on the same movements over and over again, sometimes it makes sense for you to use the automatic oiler and just configure it to that setting. Correct. Correct.
Yes, I understand that, right? But sometimes people I'm old fashioned. Like I like to have my oilers. I like to actually feel the amount of oil.
All right, give me your car keys. Give me car keys. You like old fashioned, right? Walk home, son.
I will. You know how far I live from my shop. So fuck you.
All right. Okay. Mrology says auto oilers are good for hand oiling captures and also escape route caps. I use them to place drop one captures. All right, guys. That concludes it for tonight. Again, this is Henry from Watchmaking Project. He's the managing director. He's working on watches. We're also drinking vodka. And that's it. I'm Anthony from No Bullshit Watchmaker, or Knobs, as he would prefer to call me. And
feel free to follow me at HenryLYY on Instagram. It's very dry. You'll see my face again.
Yeah, and it's very dry for this, you know. Okay, anyway, so he's at HenryLYY on Instagram. And take care, guys. It was great talking to you guys. Great talking to everybody.
Have a fantastic weekend. Chill out. Peace.